Masechet Baba Metzia, Daf Chaf, and the last daf in the first perek of the Masechet Mishnah. Masai gerot shum vegerot mazon, shitre chalisa meunin, veshitre berurin vechoma se betin, hareze yachzir. If someone finds a document of appraisal, appraising someone's property that's going to be collected for a debt, or concerning food, if someone is obligated to provide food for his wife or his daughters or for someone, this is a document that will evaluate that amount. A document that will indicate that someone had chalitza or mi'un is if a minor gets married off by her mother or brother because her father died, and then she decides while she's still a minor to object to the marriage. She has a right to do so, and then it's as if the marriage never happened. So a document that says that this girl did mi'un, and a document regarding adjudication of a court. We'll see a couple of different opinions about what exactly this means. And any court enactment, if one finds it, one can return it to the appropriate party because you can assume that this is valid. We saw this line quoted a number of times before. Now you see the context. The Gemara is going to have two opinions about this. Is this a standalone line? Or is this a part of the examples before? In other words, all these are examples of Maaseh Betin and any Maaseh Betin. So that would make sense because the idea is that these are all examples. And the reason why you would return any of these items is because they are authenticated. They come from the court and therefore they must be valid. Now, the other reading is going to be that this is a standalone line. Okay, we'll see about that. Masa ba chafisa o bedelus kematachris shel shtarot o aguda shel shtarot, hare ze yachzir. There's a general rule that we're going to see in the next perek. Regarding when you find something, if someone can tell, give a siman, give a distinctive feature or a description, then one can return it. So here, if it's a loan document, that's what we've been talking about before. So now what do you do with it? But if there's some kind of marker, and a marker could be also the packaging. So here, if one finds some documents in a container, two different types of containers, or a roll of documents, or a bundle of documents, then you have to return them. You would announce, I found some documents, and then the person who lost them would have to come and describe the packaging or the way that they were collected together. How many makes a bundle? The answer is three. Three that are attached to each other. Rabban Shimon ben Gamliel omer, echad alove mishlosha yachzir alove, shlosha alovin min haechad yachzir lamalve. So Rashbag says, if you look at the documents and they all are from the same borrower, right? You have the same borrower's name who borrowed from three different lenders. Well, then it's obvious that the borrower is the one that dropped it because, right, he's the only one that would have all these documents together. Whereas if the other way around, if you have three documents that all have the same lender in them with three different names of borrowers, well, then it's obvious that the lender was carrying these around and dropped them. So return it to him. If someone's looking through his documents and finds some document that he doesn't recognize, he doesn't know what it is. Maybe someone gave it to him to hold, but he doesn't know what it is. So then leave it there until Eliyahu comes and explains who to return it to, because otherwise, if you return it to someone who doesn't belong to, then they can use it illegally. If someone finds among his documents a cancellation document, a document canceling a loan, or we could just refer it to this as a receipt. So this would be a case where the lender finds a receipt of payment. Now, usually, if it was actually paid, then the lender would give the receipt to the borrower and the borrower would hang on to the receipt that it was paid. So if the borrower has a receipt, then surely he can use it as proof that it was paid. But here the lender has the receipt. So he should do what's in the receipt, meaning he should assume that indeed this this loan has been paid, that is canceled. Now, what is the lender doing with it is a good question, and the Gemara will discuss this further. All right, Gemara. Mai shitre berurin. What does it mean, documents of adjudication? Hachatid gemushtare ta'ana, Rabbi Yirmiya amar ze borer lo echad, ve ze borer lo echad. Here in Bavel, it's interpreted as being documents from each of the litigants when they make their claims. So they have documents supporting their claims, and this has to be stored away so that the court can have it documented. That way you can't add another statement afterwards. They know what you already said and what you didn't say. Or the Birmiya says, if they decide, the two litigants decide, they're going to use a Zavla court. That means that one litigant chooses one judge, the other litigant chooses their own judge, and then together, either the two litigants or the two judges choose a third judge, and that way it's an ad hoc court. This is as opposed to a standing court. So if they decide they're going to make an ad hoc court like this, then they write a document, Shtare Berurin, we agree to the adjudication of this court that we are creating. And so that's what the Shtare Berurin is. And the Talmud Yerushalmi, this is a document giving power of attorney to investigators. Okay, so all these are documents that have to do with adjudication. And this is included in the first list that one does return it to the people that are mentioned in it. Now it says, any court enactment you return to the person that it's relevant to. Here's a story you already saw. It's repeated here because it's again relevant. There was a get that was found in the betin of Rav Huna. That's what makes it a maaseh betin, if it's found in the betin. And it was written that this divorce happened in the city of Shaviri on the Rachis River. So now, what should we do? Should we return it to the woman and assume that this was a valid get that was used? Or maybe not. Rav Huna says, wait, what if there's two cities named Shaviri? Both cities may have a person with the same name and a woman with the same name that's in this one. And then if we return it to the wrong woman, then she will use it to say, I'm divorced, but she's not really divorced. So what do we do about this? So Rav Chista, as Rav Huna is a second generation Amora, as is Rav Chista, and he tells Rabba, who's a third generation Amora, so he's really a student of Rav Huna, and nevertheless he says, go and analyze this situation. Because in the evening, Rav Huna is going to ask you about the situation, right? So in other words, giving him a heads up, right? This is going to come up in the Bet Midrash, and he's going to ask your opinion, so you may as well go and study it. So he went and did some research, and he found this very Mishnah that says, any court enactment, you do return. And since this was found in the court, so this is a court document, and therefore you should return it. And don't worry about the fact that there may be two different cities of Shavira. You don't have to worry about that. You can return it. Rav Amram was there, and he asked Rabba, how can you derive a case of Isurim, which would be regarding marriage, if you give the get to a wrong person, this is, you know, a very, very serious problem. How can you derive that from monetary matters? In other words, Maaseh Betin, he's assuming this refers to monetary matters. You find a loan document. Okay, and but it's ratified in by Betin. All right, then you can return it because it's only money. And what if you get it wrong? Okay, so then we'll figure it out and we'll get the money back. You'll have to pay it back. All right, this is lower stakes. How can you derive from this Mishnah that he assumes is only talking about monetary documents? How can you derive that a get would be the same thing? And so Rabba answers, Amar le terada, shitere chalisa ome'onin tenan. He answered, you fool. What a terrible thing, right? This is, it got personal here. Rabba tells Amram, you fool, right? Look at the Mishnah. The Mishnah also says documents of chalisa and mi'un, refusal regarding marriage. And so you see that Rabba is reading the Mishnah all as one, that these are all examples of Maaseh Betin. And since among them, yes, it includes monetary examples, but also examples of prohibitions, prohibited marriage, regarding marriage, and therefore kol maaseh betin you return, that would include get also. Whereas it seems Rav Amram is reading this line of kol maaseh betin as a standalone, and maaseh betin he thinks is referring only to monetary matters, and that's why he challenged Rabbah. All right, in any case, this got unusually personal to the point that, look what happened next. Paka arza debe rav. Mor amar mishum de latai didi paka, o mor amar mishum ladai didi paka. Just as they were having this argument, one of the supporting beams of the Bet Midrash broke. And everybody looked around. This is, why did that happen? It's a sign. Yeah, but a sign of what? So Rav Amram said, it's because you called me a fool. Rabbah said, no, it's because you challenged me with this question, making me look like I don't know what I'm talking about. And so each one of them attributed it to each other. Maybe it was in fact just the fact that they were arguing and made it turn personal. It takes two to make a fight. And anyway, this was a sign that this is, you know, the Bet Midrash is not going to survive if people make it personal. It's okay to have machalokot as long as they're about the issues themselves. Masa b'ha fisa, o b'delus kema, mai ha fisa, amad abba bar hana haimet ketana, mai delus kema, amad abba bar shemuel, telika de sabeh. If one finds it in a container. So what are these two types of containers? What's a ha fisa? This is a small flask. And what's a delus kema? It's a container that the elderly would use to carry around things. Okay, in any one of these documents, any one of these containers, when people were carrying around, especially a lot of scrolls, it's hard to carry a lot of scrolls at once, so you need a scroll bag box. And so these were these round boxes that would contain scrolls, and you'd carry them around. And so if you have such a thing, then that's a distinctive marker that you can use to say, well, you know, who lost this thing? And if they can describe it, then you can return it. Tachrik shel shtarot o aguda shel shtarot. If you find a roll of documents or a bundle of documents, what's the difference? Tuna banan. Kama hu tachrik shel shtarot shelosha keruchin ze baze. V'chami aguda shel shtarot shelosha kishurin beze baze. A braita expands on the Mishnah and says, how many means a roll of documents? It's three that are rolled together. And how many is a bundle? Three that are tied together. Okay. Shemat mina kesher siman. We can learn from this that a knot is a distinguishing mark. In other words, if you have an item, it might be common things like coins, but if you that are not, you can't identify coins. What do you know, the serial number? They didn't have that back then. But rather, if it's tied a certain way, right, they might have a distinctive knot. In fact, knots were used as a way of kind of, like, instead of like a signature, you have a signature knot. So if one can describe the particular knot, then that would be considered a distinguishing mark such that you can return it. This itself is a big discussion. So is this a good proof for this? Yeah, but Rabbi Chiya said that in describing these three things together, he said rolled together, meaning only rolled, not necessarily tied together. So, wait a second. If you say that kishurin ze baze means rolled together, well, then we already said that tachrich is rolled together. So if they're both rolled together, then that's the same thing. Why would the Braita say both of them? And the answer is tachrich kol chad vechad berosha dechabre aguda deramuad ahadade uchruchot. The difference is that for the roll, the top of one is next to the end of the next one. So here's the roll of document called tachrich. So you have one document, and then where it ends, just the bottom of it overlaps just an inch or two with the top of the next one, and then that's rolled around, and then the next one is folded in. So that's called tachrich. Whereas aguda is if they're all parallel to each other and all rolled up together. So these are two different ways of rolling up scrolls. And my machriz minyan. If one finds this, you have to proclaim, right, a lost item, but you have to give a little bit of a description so someone who lost it knows that it is, but you can't describe it totally because you want the person who claims that they lost it to be able to describe the details. So when you announce this thing, right, you're not going to announce that I found a roll or a bundle, right? So you're just going to announce the number. I found three documents, and then the other person will have to describe in detail how they were presented, what kind of packaging, rolled or scrolled or whatever. Now we ask, why? How come only three? What if you find two? So then also announce, I found two documents, and then also they would have to say how it was rolled together in order to get it back. Rather, this is relates to what Rav Avinah said. If you find coins, then you know what you should just say coins. You don't say three coins, four coins. So we could apply the same thing here. One should announce just documents. Don't say three documents. Make the guy who lost it tell you how many it was. So keep the announcement more general, and that way the person who claims it will have to provide more details. So that's why if it's only two, then that's not sufficient, because if you say documents, it's already plural. So then everybody already knows it's two. So then they'll come and guess, oh, two. But that's not, you know, that doesn't mean anything. They know it's definitely not one. So they know it's plural. Therefore, only if it's three, presumably, or more, then that would be a significant point. And then they also describe other things about it. And if it's enough to show that this is, they know what they're talking about, then you return it to them. Rabban Shimon ben Gamliel omer, echad alove mishalosha yachzir lalove. Rashbag says, if you have loan documents, and they're all of the same borrower, right? One borrower that is from three people, then you know that belongs to the borrower. Because if they were from the lenders, then why would they be together? It's three different lenders in it. They live on three different places. Why would they all be found in the same place? And we ask, Dilma lekayumin hu azle? No, but maybe all three lenders went to the Beit Din to ratify their documents, and that's what they were doing together, right? They came together at the Beit Din, and they all lost them. And so we respond to that, demekayeme. Yes, you're right. If we find them, especially in the vicinity of the Beit Din, and so then it could be that they were all brought there by the three lenders. But what if they were all ratified already? So then they were already ratified, and that now they're all lost, so it must be that the borrower lost them. Dilma mida de safran afil. Hold on, maybe even if they were ratified, maybe they fell from the hand of the scribe after he ratified them, right? He comes to the Beit Din, and the Beit Din tells the scribe, okay, write this and that. And so the scribe had them all together, because that makes sense. He was ratifying them all together. And the answer is, Lama shinish kiyuma biyida de safra. No, nobody leaves a ratified promissory note in the hand of a scribe. If you're a lender, and now, you know, the Beit Din ratified it, you're going to go immediately, go and get it and act on it, because you don't want to delay in collecting your loan. You're not going to just leave it at the scribe's house for him to carry around and get lost. And so therefore, if you have all three together, we don't assume it's from the Beit Din or from the scribe that was holding it. If all three have the same name of the borrower, it must be that the borrower himself had them. These are all, why the borrower has them, because these were already paid. Once a loan document is paid, the lender gives it to the borrower was holding on to them, right, as proof that they were paid. Really, he should rip them up. Whatever, he has them. Since he has all three, it must be that he's lost them. However, on the opposite case, if you have three people that all borrowed from one lender, they all three documents, they'll have the same lender in it and three different borrowers. Well, then you assume that the lender is the one that lost them. Because after all, if you think that it's the borrowers that lost them, what would they be doing all together in the same place? If they're three different borrowers, then the borrowers should have them. So maybe the three different borrowers went to the same scribe and to write them, and that's what they're all doing together, because they all used the same scribe and they were lost there, nearby there. Oh, we're talking about, you're right, if that was the case, then we wouldn't return it. But here we're talking about a case where it was written in the handwriting of three different scribes, so they didn't go to the same scribe. No, maybe the borrowers all brought them to Beit Din to have them ratified. And the answer, Malveh Mekayim Shetareh, Loveh Lo Mekayim Shetareh. A lender is the one that ratifies the document. A borrower doesn't need to ratify the document. The whole point is that the borrower will have it. He will give it to the lender to hold as proof. And then when it's time to collect, then it's the lender that goes and ratifies the document. It's not in the interest of the borrower to ratify the document. He doesn't need to do that. So now that that's clear, we move on to the next section of the Mishnah. Im yesh imahen simponot, yaseh ma sheba simponot. If somebody finds a cancellation document, or we'll call it just a receipt, among his documents, then he has to do whatever it says in the receipt. In other words, we're talking about the lender finds a receipt that this item was that this loan has already been paid. Then we have to assume that it's a valid receipt and this loan was paid already, and the lender can no longer collect it, even though it's in the hands of the lender. All right, let's analyze this. Amarav Yirmiya bar Abba Amar Rav. Simpone yosim etachat yadeh malve, afa pishikatu bichtav yado, eno ela kimsachek upasul. Here we have a statement by Rav Yirmiya, in the name of Rav, that if there's a receipt that is in the hands of the lender, even if it's written in the handwriting of the lender, it just means he was jesting. He wrote a receipt just like that. And the Talmud Yerushalmi says, "Kimit asek." He was just writing it like, you know, oh, I hope he pays, and you know, look, then I would have a receipt. But it doesn't mean he actually wrote this receipt because he received payment. No, he was just writing it in anticipation of receiving payment. He's like a hopeful gesture, right? Or to show it, hey, look, you could have this receipt, you know, just pay me. But it doesn't mean it was actually utilized, and therefore it's invalid. So we see here that Rav Yirmiya's statement is in contradiction to, or what's called Rav's statement, is in contradiction to the Mishnah, which the Gemara is going to ask about. But anyway, that's the point. Rav says a receipt in the hands of the lender is invalid. You do not assume that it was paid. Now, what does he mean, even in the handwriting of the lender? As follows, lo mi baya ketub bichtav yad sofer. Take a member safrai tremele bichatab. Of course, if it's in the handwriting of the scribe, it's invalid, because it could be that the scribe is writing it when he gets a chance. The scribe knows that there's an outstanding loan between A and B. Maybe it's the same scribe that wrote the loan document, and he knows that the due date is coming up on Tuesday. And now he knows he's going to be busy on Tuesday, but now it's Sunday. He has nothing to do. So he says, you know what? I'll just write a receipt from now. And that way, on Tuesday, I'll save time. So it could be that the scribe wrote it before it was actually paid. And then it got into the hands of the lender. You know, he says, here, hold on to this. You'll be able to use it later. But it was never really paid. So therefore, for sure, you assume that it's not valid. But not only that, even if the lender wrote it himself, still it's invalid. Why would the lender write a receipt early? Savar dima mitremi vate ben hashemashot vekaparali dei la yahib nale la yahib lizuze echtov ana dechi iti lizuze eten le. Because the lender thinks to himself, maybe it'll happen that the borrower will come during Ben HaShemash, right before Shabbat on Friday afternoon, and he's going to want to pay me then. And if I have a receipt, then he'll give me the money. But if I don't have the receipt, then he won't give me the money, and I want to get paid. So you know what? I'll write it now to save time. And that way, anytime, no matter what, even if he comes 1 minute before Shabbat, I'll have it ready. I'll get my money. And so he might have it in his documents. And that explains why when the lender has a receipt, we do not assume it was paid and it's invalid. Tenan. Now we're going to challenge this from five different sources. The first one being our Mishnah. Im yesh imahen simponot, yaseh ma sheba simponot. It says, if there are among the lender's documents a receipt, then you say what you do what's in the receipt. If the receipt says this was paid, then you assume it was paid. It's a valid receipt. Well, that goes against Rav. And the answer is Kedama Rav Safra Shinimsa ben Shetarot Kiduin. Hachanamesh ben Shetarot Kiduin. Rav Safra is going to give the following answer to the third challenge, just in a couple of minutes. And he said regarding that the receipt was found among the torn documents. Here also we can use the same answer, that this receipt was found among the lender's torn documents. In other words, it was in the discard pile. If he had written it early, just in case, so we could use it, So, and it wasn't used yet, then it would be in the good pile, the pile of the documents that he's still currently using and wants to keep. Why would he put it in the discard pile? Only if it was already paid and the borrower didn't demand a receipt. And so now, since he's paid already, and now he finds the receipt, oh, I wrote this before, but he never asked for it. Oh, you know what? I'll rip it up. I don't need it anymore. So that's the case. If it's found in the discard pile, then you assume the loan was paid. That's the case of the Mishnah. Mishnah says you do whatever is in it, right? And you assume that the loan was canceled, right? Because the receipt was now discarded by the lender. Whereas Rav was assuming a case where the receipt was found in the good pile, the pile that things that he still wants to use. He still wants to use this receipt because it hasn't been paid yet, and he's waiting to get his money so that he can say, "All right, I have a receipt for you. Give me the money." And so that's why Rav said that it's that the receipt is invalid. You assume that the money was not paid yet because it's on the good pile. All right, Tashema. Second question in Mishnah and Baba Batra. Nimsa le'echad ben shetarotav, shetarot shel Yosef ben Shimon parua, shetarot shenehem peruin. If a lender finds among his documents a receipt that says the loan document of Yosef ben Shimon has been paid, and there happens to be two people named Yosef ben Shimon that he lent money to, well, then we assume that both of them are paid, and he cannot collect from either of them. That why? Because if the lender goes to Yosef ben Shimon A, he'll say, "Well, look at that receipt. That's a receipt that I paid you. Oh, I can't sue him." He goes to Yosef ben Shimon B. Yosef ben Shimon B claims that receipt is from my loan. And so, see, I paid you already. So, since he has a cancellation document, he cannot collect from either one. That's the Mishnah. The point here is that you see that a receipt in the hands of the lender is considered valid. This goes against Rav, who says that it's invalid. How do we answer? Kedama Rav Safra, Shimsa ben Shetarot Kedoin, Hachaname, Shimsa ben Shetarot Kedoin, as Rav Safra is going to answer in the next case, we're talking about where it's found on the discard pile. So also here, we can say that this Mishnah Baba Batra is a case where the lender found a document on his torn documents discard pile. Why did he put it there? Because he already paid it and got his money, and so he took the document and put it over there because he doesn't need this receipt anymore. That's why we assume this was paid, and if we don't know which one, then each of them can claim that it's mine and he can't collect from anybody. But Rav was talking about a case where it's on the still need to use pile, and he didn't use this receipt because he's waiting to get paid, in which case he'll hand over the receipt. Third challenge from a Mishnah in Masechet Shavuot. Tashema, Shibua Shelo Pekadanu Abba, Vishalom Alanu Abba, Vishalom Asanu Ben Shetarotav Shel Abba, Sheshetar Ze Parua. If a person dies and the heirs find that he has a promissory note, so they go to that borrower and say, "Hey, you have to pay back this loan that you owed to our father. You have to pay it to us." And then the orphans, the heirs, also make a vow. And they say, "We vow that our father never instructed us to give this promissory note back to you because you paid it. Nor did he ever say that this was repaid. And further, we swear that we have not found among all our father's documents a receipt that this was paid. And therefore, you have to pay it." What do we see from this Mishnah? What if they did find a receipt that it was paid, and this is among the lender's document? Then they would not be able to collect. In other words, we consider a receipt that is in the hands of the lender to be valid. That's the same thing that our Mishnah said. This goes against Rav, because Rav said that such a receipt is invalid. That's the challenge. Amar Rav Safra, Shenimsa ben Shetarot Kedoin. This is where Rav Safra originally said his answer. That this Mishnah in Shavuot is where they found a receipt. They didn't find any receipt, but if they had found the receipt, then we would assume it was paid. That would only be in a case if they had found the receipt in the torn documents, because that means he was paid. And then he says, "Well, I don't need to have the receipt anymore to hold on in case he pays, because he already paid." And so he tore it up and put it in the discard pile. But Rav was talking about where he has the receipt in the items that are still outstanding pile. If it's found there, then indeed it is invalid. Fourth challenge, Tashema. Simpon sheyesh alav edim. Yitkayem bechotamav. If you have a receipt that has witnesses signed on it, then it is ratified by its signatures. That sounds like it's valid, right? It has signatures. That means ratified. That means it's a valid thing. And that means that you assume that it was paid. This goes against Rav, who says that a receipt found by in the hands of the lender is invalid. This one says it's valid, this Braita. And the answer is, Ema yitkayem bechot, yitkayem mechotam, bechotamav, yitkayem mechotamav, deshailinan lehu lesahadei iparua I lo parua. This means that we have to go and ratify the document by going and finding the witnesses and asking them, was this loan repaid or not? Right? You signed on this. When did you sign on it? Did you see it being repaid? If they say, yes, we saw it being repaid, then, in fact, that's a ratification and surely it was paid. But if not, then the receipt is invalid and we do not assume that it was paid. That's the case that Rav was talking about. And last challenge, Tashema. Simpon sheyesh alav edim kasher. A receipt that is signed is valid. We're assuming it's found by the lender. If the borrower has a receipt, certainly it's good. That's the whole point of a receipt. But here the point is that if a lender finds it, then it's valid. Valid means we assume that it was paid, and so we cannot collect it. This goes against the halacha of Rav, that a receipt found among the documents of the lender is invalid. So what do we do with this? My adim edekiyum. Here, witnesses is not witnesses that sign the document, but rather witnesses of ratification. We ask them and say, you know, is this true that this was paid? And they say, yes, yeah, we know that it was paid. That's when it's valid. Otherwise, Rav would be right, it's invalid. Hachinami mistabera. And this explanation of the Braita really fits with the words, because read the full Braita, Medikatani Sefa. V'she'en alev edim pasul. If it does not have witnesses, then it's no good. Ma'en alev edim. What do you mean, no witnesses? Ir lemadaleka edim ilave edim kelal. Sericha lemembra te pasul. If it has no witnesses on it at all, no signatures on it, do you need to tell me that such a document is invalid? Of course it's invalid. It's not signed. El alav edekiyum. Rather, must be that we're assuming for sure it's a receipt that has signatories on it, witnesses that signed it. But what does it mean that it doesn't have edim? That it was not ratified. If it was not ratified, that's the halacha of Rav, it's invalid. If it was ratified, then everybody would agree that it's a valid receipt. Gufa. We now are going to quote the Braita, not the immediately previous one, but rather from the one from the fourth proof that said here, Simon Sheyesh Alev Edim Yitkayem Bechotamav. Now we're going to quote the full Braita. Simpon Sheyesh Alev Edim Yitkayem Bechotamav. En Alev Edim Viyose Mitachat Yedeh Shelish O Shiyose Lachar Chitum Shetarot Kasher. If you have a receipt that has witnesses on it, then you go ask the witnesses and you can ratify and make sure it's valid, as we already explained. If it doesn't have signatories on it, no signatures on it, no witnesses, but it's in the hands of a third party, or it's found at the end of the loan document, right after the loan document on the bottom, this receipt is written, in those cases, it's valid. Why? If it's in the third party, so that means the lender wrote something, he gave it to a third, if he trusted it in the hands of a third party, it must be it was paid. Otherwise, he wouldn't give it to someone else, and then it could get into the hands of the borrower and be proof that it was paid. He might hold it himself, so to have on hand when he gets paid, he'll give it to him, but he wouldn't give it to anybody else. So if somebody else has it, that means it must be valid. And similarly, if it's written on the loan document at the end, this document has been paid, there's no way that the lender would write that down before it was actually paid, right, in anticipation, not even because he's going to come on Friday afternoon and I want to just write it from now, because no lender would ruin his own document. See, when it comes to if the borrower doesn't pay, then the lender brings the loan document to court. If he brings it to court and it says on the bottom, this has been paid, then the court will say, oh, it says it's been paid. You can't collect with this. So he's not going to ruin, undermine his own document by writing down the bottom. If he did write that, even without signatures, then you know that, in fact, it was paid. Hadran alach shenaim ohazin, chazakim uberuchim.